I mean, it's crazy. I was sitting there one night on my job site, and it was when I was doing the Hernandez Ranch, the original Hernandez Ranch interviews with those guys that we worked at, with me and Anthony and Scorpion and my brother. We all worked with these guys that worked for a very large construction company. And when I did those, when I met these guys, I just kind of fell into that. You know, I just met them when, you know, I'd known them for a long time, but I never knew that anything about that they had seen Dogman and all this other stuff. And one day I was working out there on post with my kettlebells and doing my workout, and started talking to the, almost was going to say his name, his alias is Jerry, but we started talking, and next thing you know, I'm listening to Dogman Encounters. He heard it a couple times, and he's like, when he started hearing somebody describe it, he kind of stopped and was like, started asking me about it. And I told him what it was. So that's how I met the guy. And then he goes, dude, I've seen these things. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I turned it down and I said, are you kidding me? And he goes, no. I know what this is. I've never heard of Dog Man, but I know what this guy's talking about. He goes, we have those on our property. Yeah. And so then we started talking, and it turns out, you know, that I got this whole wealth of information, or we as a group did, from these guys who worked with us. And we had worked with them for 2 years and never even knew that about them, you know. And so, you know, they started telling us all these stories. And so while I was doing around the same time that I was working at those sites for that construction company, who we still work for sometimes off and on, which is why I'm not saying their name. But we were working in one way down in South Austin, and I was there, you know, and there was this sheriff's deputy that would come in there every once in a while. And I ain't gonna lie, he would pull in and he would take a little nap, you know. And I started talking to him one day. It turns out he was half Hispanic, half Native. And we started talking, and we got into some weird stuff. It was right after I had been talking to those guys and getting the stories together so I could go on to Vic's show and tell their stories. And so he goes, yeah, he goes, I came through here early. I saw you talking to a big group of guys, and y'all were out here, you know, kind of, you know, having a good time or whatever, you know. And I said, yeah, those are some friends that they work for the company, you know. And he goes, oh yeah. He goes, I saw him drinking, you know, and I figured you were with them, so it wasn't a big deal. I said, yeah, they've been working for the company for years, you know, so I don't really mess with them. They were telling me some stories, you know. And he goes, I mean, like, just out of the blue, he's like, you know, he asked me, what about? And I kind of thought it was a little forward, you know, to ask me, but I thought maybe this guy's just being a cop. He's asking me, you know, maybe he's suspicious or something, you know. And he's like, because there'd been a lot of theft. You know, and I said, well, nothing criminal, nothing about, you know, people stealing or anything like that. You know, I said it was more about weird stuff, you know, nothing you'd be interested in. You know, I just kind of said that quickly. And he was like, weird stuff, like ghosts. Like, he just, you know, he just kind of blurted out. He was a very blunt guy, you know. And I said, nah, not really ghosts. It's more about, like, you know, like cryptids. And he was like, cryptids, kind of like he wasn't real familiar with the term. And I said, you know, like creatures, you know, like Bigfoot, but not really Bigfoot, more like. And then he literally told me, he goes, like skinwalkers. And I told, you know, and he said that, and I was like, okay, so this guy, like, it was like he was, you know, he was onto what I was talking about. And yeah, I said, actually, it's not really skinwalkers. I mean, it's called Dogman. And he goes, what is that? Because a lot of people in Texas didn't know what that was. You know, they don't know what that is. And he goes, and I told him, I said, well, it's kind of like the skinwalker you're talking about, but it's something different, you know? And he goes, well, what do you mean different? I mean, like, what is it? Like, and I was like, it's like a werewolf, but maybe not. We're not 100% sure. And he goes, oh, like a skinwalker. And I'm like, I guess. And I didn't know he was Native. I thought he was Mexican. And we both started talking, and he says, well, my mother's Native, and my dad is Mexican. And we started talking, and we just kind of hit it off. And, you know, he was originally from New Mexico, and he had been living here for a long time. He got married, went to school here, whatever, in Austin. And so he ended up telling me, like, a story about a skinwalker that had harassed his in-laws from his first marriage. And, you know, and about how that there was this guy who was a shapeshifter, and it was this – And then he was really into the paranormal. He was into ghosts big time. And he was telling me all this stuff. This is a cop. And so he would come through there at my site where I was at, me and my brother would work that site together, and he would come through there and he would talk to us probably like, you know, two or three times a week. And he would tell us stories. He told us a UFO story about not his story, but it was somebody that was related to him in New Mexico that had a UFO story. And it was, get this, on a property that was also haunted, okay, then also had skinwalker activity. And he said that what he told me, this is a police officer, right? This is a sheriff's deputy. What he told me was, in his opinion, he believed that there are certain people that are just prone to these things, and that this particular person that was related, you know, that they had been experiencing things that, you know, their whole life, and that when he would go out there to their ranch, that it was like weird stuff would happen. Like he literally saw poltergeist activity. Like he witnessed it. Right. And, you know, this is a police officer, you know, and he just was, you know,
there are definitely people out there though, Josh, that are sensitive, mm-hmm. and they can see certain things that, the rest of us can't see. And, just going back on what you were saying before, if you're in this, I don't want to call it business, but in this line that you and I are in and many other people are, I mean, you can't help but getting reports. I mean, I get anywhere from 12 to 15 reports a week from throughout the country. And also, I just got one from Pretoria, South Africa, and I helped the gentleman out. We were talking back and forth on Messenger. And I assisted him with that. And he's also with law enforcement over there in South Africa. I mean, you're going to get reports. So I can't understand these guys that go out there and say, oh, I don't get any leads. I don't do this and that. I think they're lazy. They just don't want to do the work, or they're just passing it off. I mean, I've got so many myself right now that I can't keep up with it. And I can't send teams out here and there and everywhere, you know. Well, number one, because of COVID. And number two, because there are so many of them, I just have to research them as best I can, you know, from here.
Yeah. I mean, and let me ask you a question, like, as far as like your research and the stories that you get from people, what is like, you know, off the top of your head, just give me a quick, whatever, if you, you know, what is the most disturbing one that you've gotten from the NADP?
Oh, in reference to a dogman one.
Yeah.
The most disturbing one I've ever gotten was where this gentleman, his dog was found torn apart just down the street. And he saw something large, you know, before his dog had run off. He saw something extremely large. He's telling me about the size of one of his pine trees. And I went and I took a look at it. And the very next, I guess it was about 3 hours later, his dog was out in the yard, and his dog wasn't out in the yard, and he found it just down the street, all torn apart. I mean, he took pictures of it. I went there. I saw the dog. It was just totally torn apart, and I'm like, what the heck could have done this in this area? Now, we're talking about an extremely built-up area, $600,000 to $700,000 houses. We don't have a lot of black bear in New Jersey, and we sure as heck don't have a lot of mountain lions or anything like that out here because they're built up so much. And where this neighborhood was, it wasn't near any sort of forest area or anything like that. But he's telling me he saw this big, large creature, and it was moving fast, and it wasn't on four legs either. So, I mean, I had to go out to check that one out because, first of all, it was only about 20 miles away from where I live. And he was quite upset, and he couldn't tell his wife what happened because he didn't want her to get super upset. And I mean, they're in their early 70s. The guy did not wear glasses. He was highly educated, and he's not prone to telling stories like that. I mean, he's quite successful. You know, he's got the three Beamers in his three-car garage over there and things like that. It was just like, it was something just terrifying for him to have seen happen. He took it to the vet. where they had it cremated, and they, you know, he has his dog in his urn. But I mean, we're not talking about a little dog here. This was like a, I always get this wrong, a Belgian Malinois.
Malinois, yeah. No,
a Malinois, there you go. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this thing just got torn to shreds. Couldn't understand why. Couldn't understand how it got out of his yard either. But something must have got into his yard, jumped back over the fence, and, you know, took his dog. It wanted his dog, and that was the end of that. I mean, that's some pretty nasty stuff.
So you think, in your opinion, that it was a dog man that did this?
I kind of feel it was, because I saw one back in 2013 in Watchung Reservation, where this gentleman lives is only about 6 miles away from the Watchung Reservation. Kelly, one of my members back in 2018, reported it to me. And then again in 2020, she gave another report of another incident in her area. She lives down near the Pine Barrens. And back in 2018, I had a neighbor, like I said, 900 feet, lived 900 feet away from me. And her backyard is near a federal forest area. And she saw it there. I just want to back up on this lady, Mary, who I'm naming her Mary, whose little dog ran away and ran back, who flashed the pictures. She's from Oregon. She's how would you call her? A ranch girl. She was the only girl that her parents had. And they grew her up to shoot rifles and guns. She's a hunter, bow and arrow and all that stuff. She's been out there hunting with her father and everything, and she's not afraid of much. And we're talking in a neighborhood where I am, and I'm like, this is amazing. This is absolutely. I'm in Central Jersey. But granted, the forest area over here in the back, it's pretty thick. It's pretty grown in and everything. So it's distinct possibility, but I think this man's dog was destroyed by a dog man.
Wow.
I mean, a bear couldn't hop that fence. This was a 5-foot metal fence. Now, granted, he didn't have a spike fence or anything like that. It was smooth across the top, but something went over that fence, grabbed the dog, went out, maybe went about 20, 30 feet away from where he lived, and did the dog in. I mean, this thing was torn apart, totally torn apart. So, I mean, that's one of the reports I got. And like I said, I get anywhere from 12 to 15 a week, and it's just hard to keep up with it all. I can imagine you must get about 30 a week easily.
And so that being like the most like disturbing one, I mean, like, because of course somebody's dog was killed. I mean, but I mean, do you get any that are like ongoing, like people's property? Like, what am I trying to say here? Somebody who's got the activity that's continually going, like ongoing.
There is a lady whose husband passed away. She lives in Arkansas, and it's a little hard for me to get up to Arkansas to check this out. She says that they're being harassed, and she believes it's by dog men. Her daughter, who now lives with her after her husband passed away, her daughter moved back in with her, says that she saw a wolf head in the window, and her windows are 6 feet off the ground. So, and she says this is an ongoing thing. It's something I've been wanting to grab a team together and go up to investigate, but like I said, travel right now is restricted, so we can't go out there. I mean, I hate to use it as an excuse, but to be honest with you, you can't even go into the state of Massachusetts without having a COVID test within 3 days before going in. Because if you get stopped and the trooper checks it out and sees you're from New Jersey, he's going to want to see your COVID test. And they could actually arrest you, and you will get charged $500 fine. So I'm checking out what each of the states have their rules and regulations. I want to check out Texas because, like I told you, I want to come down there and, you know, do a workout or two with you.
Well, you saw my meme on Facebook, you know, if he dies, he dies.
Yeah. I know. I figured it can't be that hard with a belly that big. I mean, God, that guy really did you He did you bad.
You saw that? You saw that? There was a meme where he drew my belly all big. I was like, dude, my belly's not that big. I got like a little bit of spare tire, but geez, this guy like went all out on the belly there. Yeah. I believe that was that Brian that did that? I can't remember who did that, who in my group that drew that picture. But yeah, I was like, dude, come on, man. Like, geez. But that's a card.
He didn't even give you a lats or anything. And I mean, your shoulders were like as wide as a barn door. So, I mean, shit, he should have done something like that. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I was like, geez.
Oh, my God.
I got huge traps, too.
One guy put your face on a bodybuilder's head.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
I couldn't believe that one either, but, They should have put you on somebody like in the World's Strongest Man competition. You kind of look more like one of them guys.
Yeah, you know, I trained with a guy who did strongman for a while. I know that there are a lot of strong people out there, and a lot of like big, tough, strong people. And you know, and I tell people, I don't pretend to be the strongest person in the world or the toughest person in the world. But unless you're like training every day and you're doing MMA, I'm pretty sure that I got a good chance. And I tell people that with all our honesty, I'm just being honest, unless you're out there and you're training every day. And I know guys that do, I know a lot of fighters and they do, and they train like all the time. And that's what they do, you know, and they fight professionally. So they're in shape and they're fighting, they're training every day. Like, I mean, that's all they do. And I'm not training like that every day, at least not anymore. And so, yeah, those guys are going to have a chance. But if you don't, you know, and I tell people all the time when they ask me this question, they'll say things like, well, the dog man that you saw, okay, do you feel like you could have, you know, defended yourself against it? And I'm like, absolutely not. I just don't feel that way. I mean, even as strong as at my peak, at my strongest, you know, the most I'd ever thrown up on the bench was 660. You know, my squats going 800, you know, over 800 pounds. Like, you know, this strong, very strong person. I was a very strong person. Approaching, like, my strength-wise was approaching, like, you know, almost like competition stuff, you know. Like, I mean, and I wasn't even competing. I was just that strong. But, you know, do I think that I would have a chance against one of these things? No way. I mean, like the one you saw, the one I saw, you have no chance, dude. And here's another thing too, Nick, when you saw your creature that you saw, think about it. It was on a reservation, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Watchung Reservation. It's a big park area up on the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's acres and acres and acres of water and just woods and, like I said, they have a museum there, and they show you all the different animals that they have out there. I mean, some of the snakes are kind of big. I mean, geez. No, you don't stand a chance against an apex predator like that. Like I said, I was ready to blast him with the pepper spray. I was like seconds away from letting it go, but it didn't turn to me. It didn't care.
Yeah.
It just didn't care. I was insignificant.
And let me ask you this question. I mean, you know... And just answer it the best you can, I guess. Do you think that it could have been a skinwalker?
It's quite possible, because we have the Lenape Indians that used to inhabit this area.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a, up in the Watchung Reservation area near the museum, they have a once a year, I don't want to call it a party or anything, but a celebration with the Lenape, and they have a lot of... Native Americans there in native dress, and there's a lot of that thrown up on the boards over there for people to learn about, and skinwalker is one of the things mentioned. It's one of the things mentioned there quite often, and I've tried to speak with some of the Native Americans about that, and they don't want to talk about skinwalkers.
They don't
do not want to talk. No, they just turn away and walk. They won't even mention it. And one young fellow who was in his teens, a full Native American, full blood, he said to me, he says, they do not even want to say the name, because they have the names in their tribal language. They don't even want to say the name Skinwalker in English, because they feel that it's extremely bad luck to speak about one, because then it'll come back and it'll come after them. Mm-hmm. So it's quite possible. It's quite possible that this could have been a skinwalker. But at 7'7" and that big and muscular, it's like nothing like I've ever seen. And I've seen, I went to Space Farms Zoo in New Jersey where they had Goliath. He was a scientifically bred bear. And he was, excuse me, and he was over 12 feet tall. And he was optimally fed and bred by the zoo, over 12 feet tall. And I mean, that was something to look at. So, I mean, even looking at something at 7'7", I mean, that's just totally amazing. It could have been terrifying, but I was just thinking about defending myself just in case.
You know, I have a story that I've never shared, and I don't like telling stories that I don't have someone that can verify it or back it up, you know, because then it's somebody can say, well, you're not telling the truth. At least if you have someone that was there with you that saw it or was, you know, a part of it, you know, they can verify, hey, this guy's not making this up. I was there, you know? And so, that's why I waited a while before I did the black hellhounds, episode. I wanted to have my friend Tony Duran come on because it was him and me and two other guys that had that experience. And I don't know what it was, you know, but I've always believed when I was working at doing security for a Cabela's, in Buda, which is in south of Austin, that I had a run-in with a skinwalker. And I really believe that that's what it was. But it didn't turn, and I'm not going to sensationalize here and get everybody all like hyped up to listen to that story, because you'd be kind of let down. It was a weird thing that happened to me. Very weird, very odd. Knowing that I have the eye, like the ojo, you know, the ojo dotado, and that, mm-hmm. like I was born that way, and I've always had that ability to sniff out and see the paranormal and to understand it a little better. And I really believe that there's, you're gifted that, and that's born, you're born with the spirituality. If you go to numerology, my numbers are 7. I'm a life path 7, and I got a lot of 7s in my numbers. You know, and I was born 7/14/75, you know. When you look at this situation, it's a very weird situation, but it wasn't really scary. It wasn't really terrifying. There wasn't really anything. It was just weird. It was a weird situation. And I honestly believe that this guy, may have been a skinwalker. And I'm going to talk about that on my show at some point. I'm not going to get into it tonight, but I'm just leaving everybody with that. So I will tell that story at some point, but I was by myself. And with just this other, just the person that I think was a skinwalker. And so I don't want to delve into it like right here, right now. But if you listen to, if I tell you the story and you listen to the details of it, you're probably going to come to the conclusion that, yeah, that's probably what I was dealing with. As far as I could tell, it wasn't malevolent, or he wasn't malevolent. He was annoying. And I think that that's why he did what he did, because I think he had that ability and he was being a punk.
Because he can, yeah.
That's what I think he was being, you know.
Just one question about it that's not going to give any too much away. Any particular size that you could speak about? How tall?
Just a normal size. I mean, and I think that he, you know, I didn't see a dogman type entity or anything like that. I mean, I'll get into it, like I said, on the show one day.
Right.
And I don't want to give too much of it away. I'll tell you the story. It's not real long. I'll tell you what happened when we get off air. And folks, I'll leave you with that, so you guys will have something to hang on, you know, and just remind me, and I'll tell the story. Because I kicked it around with my team, you know, because Anthony, I've told you this story years and years ago. I mean, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And from what I told you, would you deduce that that's what that was?
I would.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I told my wife that, and she was like, that has to be what that was. I mean, and it's a weird story. And at some point I will, you know, divulge that story And I'll convey that story to everybody. But right now, it's I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get all into that. And then there's another, you know, a series of events that happened to me in a haunted building here in Austin when I was working. And it was at that time a bank building, and it had a lot of just a lot of paranormal activity that went on. My friend Tony Duran actually worked there too, and he talked about it on the show. But we just kind of scratched the surface. But it was good to have him on to lead into that, because when I do the episode for that, then I can say, hey, this guy, it happened to him too. And he came on my show, so I'm not making it up. But the Cabela's thing, I was all by myself out there. And oddly enough, it was in January. It was in a January. It was like, I think, January of 2005 when that happened. So, yeah, it was very weird. Incident that took place, and I went home and I told my my brother, my roommates, like, that I lived with at that time. I said, dude, you're not gonna believe what happened to me. It was very weird. And the guy was just an obnoxious person, but I believe that he had something going on with him. But like I said, we'll get into it at some point. And Nick, let me ask you another question. Do you, in your opinion, you know, believe that some of these reports that we get, and let's just say the ones that aren't connected to what you believe could be the UFO phenomena, do you believe that these reports, that there are different things going on, like are these naturally occurring animal-type creatures, these dogmen, do you think that the bulk of the reports is that's what it is, or do you think that they could be skinwalkers? As I know you already said that the ones you think with the lights and all that could be something interdimensional or extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
It's possible, and it's highly possible, that they can be skinwalkers. And because of the fact that we can never get a clear-cut picture, except for the lady down the road from me, we can never get a clear-cut picture of a Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Dogman, I am really leaning towards them being extraterrestrial. You know, whether it's E.T.'s pet Dogman or Sasquatch or something, or maybe they are the extraterrestrials themselves, you know, down here checking us out. Because, I mean, I'm not a ufologist or anything like that, but why? Why, after all this time, that we cannot, and after all the thousands of reports, we cannot pin down a unblurred picture of a Sasquatch? Why? I just can't get that.
Yeah, and you get hundreds and hundreds of reports. I mean, you and I have seen one.
In a year's time, yes. Yes, and how many I research. I also go to libraries, and I look up old reports, newspaper reports. Yeah, you know, when I go to other states, I search out libraries and I go into their archives. You know, yeah, it's on microfilm these days, or, you know, depending on the library, you can get it on their computer in their data bank over there. But there are literally thousands of sightings. Is everybody BSing? I highly doubt it. Is everybody drunk? I highly doubt it. Is the majority's people, you know, faking it just to get their minute of fame? I really highly doubt it. I mean, you can't have all of this stuff and not have some truth come out of it. That's what my belief at this point is.
One of the things that you know, that I did a show not too long ago, and it was my cousin Trey came on the show, and he lived in Wyoming, near the Wind River Reservation, and he spent a lot of time on the reservation and had a lot of friends that were natives. And so he had a lot of information that he had gotten, and he comes on the show and he talks about these skinwalkers and these things that would go on there, and the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and how they would have to deal with these entities, you know. And you know, when you listen to that, and then you get these stories from different sources, different people, you know, you it all, if you start putting the pieces all together, you know, you're right. I mean, we're not, we don't get pictures of them. They all seem to have this supernatural quality about them that it's almost laughable when you think of the people who just absolutely believe that these things are just these, this race of creatures that are just running around out in the woods. And there's just all this evidence out there and we just haven't found it yet. How's that even possible? How can you even justify being so silly? I mean, it just, to me, it just sounds, it sounds ludicrous. I mean, you know, I really think if you zeroed in on the nature of the beast, you would have maybe one or two different things going on. But just for them to all be a flesh and blood animal that's just running around out there, that's evolved that way, that's, or adapted that way, whatever you want to call it, you know, and that's all it is. That's just ludicrous. I mean, you know, I was talking to Ken. He was on my show and, you know, a few times he's been on the show, and we were talking about it the other day, and he calls me up and he says, "Hey, I got an idea." He's like, "We should get, you know, a forensics sketch, you know, to artists to do the renderings of these creatures." So we get a lot of reports, and then we just have them draw the different, you know, creatures and see, you know, which one. And that's a good idea. Like you get the different ones and see, get as many reports as you can and of the witnesses, and have them talk to the forensic artist and have them draw. And then we kind of put them in a pile, like this one is this. They all look kind of like this. And then this one is this. And then, you know, because that's the only way you can get the real description of it, is somebody describes it or somebody can draw it. And that's because we don't have pictures of these things.
That's it. Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know.
I actually have, in the NADP, I have our sketch artist, Vince Richardson. He's our onboard sketch artist. So anytime I have a report, and I had a report last month of one, I had him draw something up for me.
Oh yeah, I know Vince. Vincent's a good guy.
He's great. He is great. We're thinking of we got a plan to go down to LBL, Land Between the Lakes, Tennessee, to reopen that case down here, the Dogman case. We were going to send you an invite, ask you if you would come.
I think I'll pass on that.
Come on.
I don't think I'm going to go to the LBL. Vic Cundiff, a good friend of mine, you know who that is, right, from DER?
Yeah,
he had given me some advice about never going there, and I just think that I just would probably take that advice. I've had too many friends of mine that have...
Come on.
You know, I'm not really into it. I'm not feeling it, man. I don't want something following me back. I, you know, remember we were talking and there was this woman that she's moved around, trying to get her to come on the show before I just go ahead and just tell her stories. I'd rather have her come on than just tell her stories. I'm trying to get her to do it.
Yeah.
And she, has this wealth of information about these one dog man in particular, two of them actually. And they followed her around from three different states. From Arizona to Utah, and from Utah to Idaho. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I was like, do you really believe, okay, that these things are flesh and blood creatures that are traveling around finding you? Because I just don't believe that. I just can't.
I don't think those are dog men.
I don't either.
Think that's a dog man. I would say that was a skinwalker.
That has to be. I mean, to me, that's what that is. And I mean,
right.
there's no, you know, and she's like, no, these are dog men and they're a species and all this other stuff. And she says she's had telepathic communication with them, you know, and I'm not going to pass judgment. I'll bring her on, let the audience make their own, can draw their own conclusion about it. But for my money, that's not something that's physical, flesh and blood. That's something that can manifest spiritually, because she said that she was sitting, brushing her hair, and she was sitting in her room, and she looked out the window, and one of them was sitting up in a tree looking at her out the window. And she said that there's been three or four of them, but there's only two that really that interact with her. And that one of them is kind of just kind of there, you know? And then there's another one that's very aggressive, and then she thinks that if it ever got the chance, it might do something to her. And then I told her, I was like, well, if what you say is true, okay, it's the absolute truth, then I think you're in very real danger. I mean, you know, obviously you know, she doesn't seem to take it as seriously. She says she can't think about that because then it'll paralyze her and not be able to live her life. And I told her, I said, I just don't, and how she can still believe that these things are some sort of flesh and blood animal type beings that are just, like a dog, you know, that just follows you around. I just can't understand how you could make that assumption if that's what's really going on, you know, because yeah. I've heard weird stories of animals like finding their owners, like, you know, thousand miles.
A cat went 1,000 miles.
Yeah, you've heard it too. Yeah. But what are the odds, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that animal must be a little bit higher intellect than your normal cat. And I've heard of a dog going 480 miles to find his family. But what she's had there, that's got to be something more bordering on the supernatural than on a regular dog man. And I believe the thing in LBL, Tennessee, was a regular dog man. And yeah, that's too bad you won't take us up on it, though, Josh, because I wanted to get Nate Rudd and Greg Yost, you know, from up in Washington.
I know Greg
State
and Nate.
Area.
Yeah, have those guys go with you. They'll entertain you. And it's the south end of the LBL, isn't it? Like the south end is where the
near Kentucky. Yeah,
because the north end is the Sasquatch territory, right? And the north and the south end.
I wanted to get a group of people that know what they're doing, and plus, of course, I'm going to bring security. Also, Vince Richardson, he said he'd come, you know, to do the artwork for us. Ashira 7, she's one of my members. She's a sensitive. She's very sensitive to things that go on, and we're going to ask her to, you know, come along. We're definitely planning this, so I'm hoping that this darn virus goes away, and hoping to get down there around August. I don't want to go in the winter months because that would be miserable.
Well, I'd be miserable in August, too. You're going to be hot. And
I like the heat, though.
Oh, man. If you lived in Texas, though, you'd experience the heat on another level. I mean, it's like you could fry an egg outside. You know, you get in your car, you just breathe in the heat, and you feel like you're going to pass out.
Well, I've been to Brahan Air Force Base in Afghanistan, and I'm going to tell you something. it feels like your liver's melting when you're over there.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Middle East.
The heat is undescribable. You don't understand how bad it is.
I've been to really bad deserts. Believe me, I've spent time in some deserts. Yeah, it's bad. I mean, the summers in Texas, you know, it's like it's that, and then there's humidity that goes with it, and it's just not pleasant. And I tell people that, too. I mean, it's like sometimes it feels like you're in a jungle, you know, and it's just it's awful. You'll be outside, and then you'll sweat, and you'll have to go in and change your shirt a couple times a day. It's rough. And then people don't realize this, but we talked about this earlier off the air, but the Texas can get very cold, too. Well, it just snowed here a couple weeks ago. I mean, it gets cold, man. I mean, you know, in the 20s and 30s pretty consistently, you know, you know, during the day, sometimes it'll be nice, but then it'll dip into the 30s, late, you know, the high 30s, even in a nice day. And so, you know,
Texas is one of those areas where during the daytime you've got some nice weather or pleasant, and then at nighttime, I guess it just drops and, you know, you could freeze to death sometimes.
Yeah, and it's weird because, like, we're not even in a deserty area. Like, where we're at, this isn't the desert. We're nowhere near the desert. This is forest. There's a lot of forest here, you know, and so, but it's just so the climate is so extreme and harsh, you know, here at times. But you know, it's not keeping people away. They're just moving here in droves and destroying it. So, you know, I really wish all these people that were just not from here would stop. You come visit, but you know, don't forget to leave. I mean, and it's like, geez, you know, and then they want everything to be changed the way that they were, you know, where they were at, and that's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but and a lot of them too are very, very not, they don't care about preserving the Texas culture, the heritage or whatever. And they're always like, I don't know what the big deal is. Why are y'all so proud of your state? Well, because we were our own country at one time. We fought for our independence. How about that?
That's right.
I mean, you know,
I lived in Salisbury, North Carolina, and went up to Charlotte. And I'll tell you, it's like living in New York, New Jersey area. Because like you just said, people went there and they forgot to leave and go back home. So, they used to call me a North Charlotte Yankee.
Yankee. Yeah. When you know, and it's funny because like if you look in Florida, there's like a ton of people from New York that live in Florida. You know, everybody goes there to retire.
They've taken over.
Yeah, they've taken over. You know, it's like something but Yankees in Florida, you know. And I don't know against Yankees. Two of my best friends are Yankees, but there's just certain types, you know, of people that just, you know, Austin in particular is full of Californians and Chicagoans or whatever, however you say it. But and most of the people, you know, you can get along with them. I mean, they're not, but there are some people that are just very overbearing, and they treat us like we, like the locals, like we're hicks, and they're teaching us something. They're like, Starbucks. They're pointing at their coffee, you know. Oh, okay. I did not know that. Coffee. Hot. You know, and like, the, oh, honey, let's teach these hillbilly backwards hicks about stuff, you know.
And lattes and things like that.
Well, you know, yeah. and then you go to my hometown, which is, you know, full of stories about Dogman and all this other stuff, you know, that guy, that whole, as you were talking about, the black dog. And I met this guy who was running a bar in what used to be the old high school, right, Anthony, was it? We were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he had a bar there. But he was cool, man. He was, like, from North Carolina or something. And him and his wife were there, and they were really cool, man. They weren't these hipster. But, you know, the whole downtown area now has just been taken over by little hipster dive bars. And
yeah, there's a craft beer bar in Taylor now. Such a tragedy.
Yeah, it's horrible. And they you know, and they think that they're bringing culture to us or something. And we're like, dude, we had a culture here. And, you know, and in fact, there was this guy the other day on Facebook who was talking about my hometown. And literally he insulted me. He was calling me a hick and saying, oh, you're from Taylor. You don't know what you're talking about. That's Hickville. And I'm like, dude, Transformers was filmed there. Mark Wahlberg and Optimus Prime. Literally, this is a cool thing for Dogman fans. I'm going to tell you this. In the scene, I think, which Transformers is it? Transformers 4?
I think it's a fourth or fifth
fourth
one.
Or
I
fifth
can't remember.
One where Mark Wahlberg and Optimus Prime are fighting. Okay, now check this out, Nick and folks at home. Mm-hmm. In that scene where they're fighting that mercenary or bounty hunter that was trying to kill Optimus Prime, Mark Wahlberg and Optimus Prime are fighting that guy. Those buildings around there, they're only about maybe 50 yards from where my friend's grandmother saw a werewolf, dogman, whatever you want to call it, underneath the railroad track, underneath a train. Like literally.
That area right there?
That area right there where that railroad interchange is. And she told us, she's an African-American woman. She's deceased now, but she told us that there was one, she once went into that, and I think I might have told this on Dogman Encounters or one of my shows. I think it was Wolfman in Texas, wasn't it, Anthony?
I think so.
On that episode, she walked into the Taylor Cafe, okay, which is like right around the corner from where that scene was filmed, you know, where Mark Wahlberg was there. And she says she saw this guy who was borracho, you know, he's drunk. And even the African Americans and, you know, and white people in my hometown they'll talk Spanish slang some, you know, because there's a large Mexican population there. As you would say, Tejanos were from, you know, Mexicans from Texas, you know. And so there's a large Tejano population there. And so she said that she goes, you know, he was definitely borracho, you know. And she said it kind of like, you know, she didn't say it with a Spanish accent, but she's like, and this dude, he was up underneath a railroad car asleep, you know, and then when, you know, and he came out and was stretching and he was wearing a blue shirt, you know, or I can't remember exactly what she said all he was wearing. But she said when she came back out, she saw this wolf looking creature with that same shirt on underneath the railroad car. Asleep, like it had gone back to, like it was like this bum had shapeshifted or something. It was weird. It was a weird story, and she told us that when I was like a young kid, you know, like a teenager. So, you know, you get all these weird stories that people have told you over the years in that area, you know. And then there's like not far from Taylor, going east, probably about 15 miles or so. There's a story above of what when me and Ryan were doing the Genosko episode that we're going to have to redo. which I'm going to redo in a couple days. I'm going to tell that story, but there was a, this Bigfoot type creature that was like tearing the heads off of these, cattle and sheep. And it was like a reddish brown color. And it wasn't even, it's not even far from my hometown, but it was distinctly Squatch-like, not really a Dogman. So, you know, you have, some critters running around down here but I think it's interesting though, you know, that, if you're a fan of Transformers and you know, that scene where they filmed that right there, it's just right around the corner from there is Taylor Cafe. And that's where, my friend's grandmother years ago saw what she thinks was a werewolf because it had on a shirt, you know, and of course it wouldn't be a stretch because that the railroad interchange, there's a lot of cotton that's grown in that area. And not as much as it used to be because of the treaties with Egypt. So we get all our cotton from the Egyptian cotton, which isn't really anything special. It's just we have to buy it from them. So, but our cotton industry has kind of dried up a little bit. But there used to be all this cotton that they would ship, you know, from that spot right there. And there's a railroad interchange right there. That's how my grandfather ended up in Taylor. He was originally from Chicago. And that's how he ended up meeting my grandmother because he came to work down working on the railroads. And so, you know, and it was, you know, there's a lot of railroad workers that would come there and because of the all the cotton shipping that they did from there.
That was in Texas?
Yeah, Taylor, Texas, yeah.
Oh, Taylor, wow.
Yep. So we've hit the 3-hour mark, Nick, and I think that we have talked a lot. did you have anything else? Any closing? Your closing arguments, sir.
Well, my closing arguments would be just don't be close-minded to things, and always keep something over there on the back burner, and as I tell everyone all the time, always look up.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to always be able to do. You look up because you never know what is up there. Something I wish we would have hit on was the Thunderbirds, you know, speaking of Native American Indians. That's a topic for another show.
Well, yeah, you can always come back. As far as all your encounters that you've collected too, I mean, you know, you can always come back and we can do this again. I mean, you know, there's no policy. You can only be on the show once. That's it. Well, see ya.
Yeah.
you've used up your 3 hours, sir. Well, see you later. I never bring anybody back on. No, sir. I never do. No, that's not how it works, Nick. You come back anytime. You're welcome. You're a friend of mine and your wealth of knowledge too.
I want to physically come down here and enjoy your brisket, barbecue brisket.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The best Taylor Cafe, I think, would probably be the best in Taylor. What do you think, Anthony, or Davis Grocery?
Definitely Taylor Cafe.
Taylor Cafe. And then in Central Texas, I think Thorndale is probably the best.
Oh, yeah.
Thorndale Meat Market, really? Trey Felton. And my friend Trey Felton that runs the Thorndale Meat Market, shout out to you. He is a Bigfooter. I mean, he loves the Sasquatch, all that stuff. I mean, and he goes out to Apache Pass, and he looks for these things. And if you go listen to my Besieged by Bigfoot in that area, that's you know, where he's out there looking, you know. What's crazy, one of my, you know, best friends, you know, had a Bigfoot encounter not too long ago in that area. Well, he thinks it was a Bigfoot. I still have to interview him officially, but it just happened like 3 or 4 days ago. He just sent me a message saying, hey, man, I got some weird stuff that happened to me. You know, message me back or whatever. You know, so I have that story I still have to look into. One of not my best friend, but like a good friend I grew up with, you know. And he saw something, you know, on the side of the road with his girlfriend. So that's interesting. I'm going to have to find out what he's talking about. But you know, if you're in Austin though, and you don't go to the my hometown or the smaller areas, Style Switch. Now he's from Taylor, because all these good barbecue places, they're using that Taylor style. They're using my hometown's style.
Ah.
Yeah. There's two other places. Like there's Taylor and then Lockhart, which is Black's Barbecue. Black's Barbecue is really good. But it's not on the par. It's not on the same level as the Taylor Barbecue.
Really?
Yeah. So those are the two big, you know, they both claim that they were the first ones. Taylor claims that they were the first ones to make the brisket like that. And then Lockhart claims they were the first one. And then it spread, you know, it spread to Dallas, Fort Worth, to Houston. But don't let them fool you. Those places up there, they did not have that kind of barbecue. It came from Central Texas, from where I'm from. And then it spread all throughout Texas, you know, over the last, you know, 4 or 5 decades. But it all came from my area, you know, where I'm from.
Well, let me tell you this. I promise you, if I can get down here, it's going to be like for 3 or 4 days, you got to give me a workout. You and I will do a workout together, and then it's on me. I don't care where we go, 2 or 3 places, the Texas barbecue. I want to go to the best ones.
Yeah,
definitely. I want that brisket. Oh, man, I am
Rudy's is good, too. They're from Bandera, and that's good brisket, too. But I think that Taylor is that their style is the best. You know,
there is the best.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of good Mexican food here too. Like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's hard to beat some of the fajitas and, you know, Austin's definitely a food mecca. If anybody ever wants to come and travel, and I give everybody an open invitation. If you're a listener of the show, and you're passing through, you're going to be anywhere close, and if I can get off or whatever. Maybe we can meet and go eat dinner or something. I'll take you to some places that are really good. There's some really good places to eat here. The tacos here are just unreal. San Antonio gets the reputation for having the best Mexican food, but I think we got them beat. We went to go eat on the Riverwalk. Anthony, me, you, and was it Zane? And we all went to go eat, and might have been Moose, who might have been with us too. And the waiter was like, "What are y'all doing down here eating Mexican food?" He goes, "Y'all got the best Mexican food in Austin." And he told us, what was that place called?
Casa Rio, I think it was.
Casa Rio, there you go. Yeah. The real touristy place, you know. But San Antonio, if San Antonio, where Ken Gerhard lives, San Antonio, they have, that is the funnest city to go do anything. I mean, you got to take the boat tour on the river, and you got to go on the Riverwalk. You know, and you got to, I mean, there's just so many places, things to do there. It's such a cool town. You know, they got SeaWorld, you know, and all these other, it's a really cool place. San Antonio is awesome. The Alamo is an amazing place. You can feel the history and the energy there. We get really nice beaches here. But, you know, like I said, the weather can just be absolutely rough. And if you live on the coast, you will get hit by a hurricane. And I'm not kidding. If you're anywhere from Galveston all the way down to Port Isabel, Corpus or Port Aransas, you will.
Corpus Christi, yeah.
Yeah, you absolutely will get hit by a hurricane. I'm not joking. You, at some point, you will get hit by a hurricane. There's no matter of if, it's a matter of when. And so you have that constant threat that, you know, every summer you might be destroyed. You know, your property might be destroyed. My wife was telling me, Nick, she's like, "Hey, let's buy a piece of, you know, Galveston." I had a buddy down there. It was like, "Hey, I got a piece of property for sale." And I'm like, and my friend Clay, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. Sorry, buddy. Don't want to live in Hurricane Alley. Sorry. Cause that's what's going to happen at some point. You know, there's going to be a hurricane, and then the winters here can be pretty cold, and the summers are, you know, brutally hot. Triple digits. I mean, one year, a few years ago, we got in the triple digits every day for 90 something day. Was it? Oh no, it was 100. We hit 100 days, wasn't it? Yeah, it went over 100 days.
That's my kind of place. I'm telling you, man.
Well, you must be a rock lizard then. You're
with my Guinea background, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's from Italy over there. We like the Mediterranean. We got this hot blood. I mean, I'm walking around in the summertime, you know, with my shirt on and everything, or shirt off, doesn't matter. And I'm just loving it. Everybody else, oh, we got to get an air conditioning.
Folks, I tell you right now, Nick is a reptilian.
I'm going to fuck you off air about that.
Yeah, we will. And Nick's a reptilian, folks. That's why he knows so much about these cryptids and the UFOs. You're a reptilian, dude. You have that. He's studying it, dude.
Reptilians, they like the sun, but they're cold-blooded, remember. So.
Well, they're cold-blooded. That's why they need the heat. You know, reptiles, they don't do well in the cold.
Love the heat.
Yeah, so you might be a reptilian.
That place, that Riverwalk place, I mean, God, you want me to come across friggin' Lizard Man over there? Jeez. God, man. I mean, we can go on for hours about that one, but, you know, not too many people heard of him. All right. Well, you know what? I got to get you off the air because we're definitely going to have a visit down there.
Yeah. You got to come. You got to come.
At 12 o'clock at night over here. I'm drooling. I want some brisket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's pretty awesome. I wish I could ship you some up there, but it just wouldn't be the same. So you got to come down. Yeah, I don't know what the restrictions are. We'll talk about it off air, and we'll see what happens, man. And maybe we can go down to San Antonio and visit my friend Ken, or we can go up to the DFW area and visit Redfern or Blackburn. They all live in this area. David Weatherly lives out in the Hill Country. You know, we all live in Texas, and it's there's definitely a heavy cryptid researcher, author/author presence here. So. Yeah, Texas.
Looks like everybody's moved out that way.
Yeah, Texas is a place to be. Well, there's a lot of weird stuff going on down here, Nick. You got to get down here. So,
believe me, I know. I know. Yeah. I'm writing an article on Monsters of Texas right now.
Oh, geez. Well, you need
so many things down here. You have a ton of them down here that people have never even probably heard of.
You need to take all those encounters and write a book, just like I do, too. We both need to write books, and just like Redfern said, it gives you that prestige of being a published author. So. Anyways, we're going to wrap this up, folks. Thanks for listening to Paranormal Roundtable. Thanks for listening to me and Nick blab about all these crazy things. And we appreciate you tuning in. And Anthony looks like he's beat. He's really tired. He reached his quota of 40 words for the episode.
Absolutely.
So I'll tell you, that guy's a blabbermouth, man.
he didn't say much. He just like sat here just looking at me the whole time like, are you done? So that's it for tonight, folks. I'm going to say goodnight, and don't forget to like and subscribe on YouTube, even if you listen to us on a different platform, because that gives us a little bit of a financial boost, and we can help keep the show going. And so from everybody, PRT, the crew, Nick Valente, thanks for coming on, everybody. Good night.
It was great.